The context for the reading today is totally different from our views today on being rich or poor and on inheritance laws. Let me explain. We all live in a world of abundance. In our world, there's a big difference between rich and poor. It seems also as if people get richer by the minute. And in our economics, we make the assumption that goods are, in principle, in an unlimited supply. To us, if there's a shortage of some kind, we just produce more to the extent of what we need. And if one person gets more than someone else, it does not imply that someone else is getting less. In our society, it's not so clear that there is distinctions in moral character between the rich and the poor. But in biblical times, it was a totally different story. All goods were in limited supply and were already distributed to the various families when they received and entered the Holy Land by God. And this included everything, not just material goods, but things like honor, things like love, status, and friendship, and also security. And because the pie could not grow larger, a larger pie would automatically mean a lesser piece of pie for someone else. Someone who was honorable in that society would not take something that not belonged to them. An honorable man would have no desire to acquire or gain anything more than to take from someone else's piece of pie. And acquisition of any kind was seen as stealing. So if you had more than someone else, you were considered as a robber and a thief, because everyone had and owned the same. So in that society and in the ancient Mediterranean culture, there was an attitude that every rich person is either unjust or the heir of an unjust person. A rich man was considered as a thief and a robber, because profit making and the acquisition of goods and wealth were automatically seen as a result of fraud or extortion. And the notion of an honest rich man was a first century oxymoron. Like in our day, we do not talk of a legal murder or a wise fool. These things did not belong to together. In the Mediterranean culture, there was no way that the rich man could be considered as a just and honorable person. So the label being rich meant something totally different in the biblical context. It was a moral, social, and economic statement of someone who stole from someone weaker, who stole from someone that was not rightfully theirs. It was synonymous for being greedy. And at the same time, being poor meant that they were unable to keep their piece of the pie. They were unable to defend their right to what rightfully belonged to them. It meant falling status. It meant that they lost what they were being given by God. Being poor meant in biblical times defenseless without any other choice. And it's in this context then that Jesus reacts to the question of someone who felt that he was deprived of something that did not belong to him. In Judaism, the oldest son always inherited a double portion from the father's inheritance. It was up to this oldest son to do with this inheritance whatever he wanted. So when this man comes up to Jesus, he was indeed greedy, but he could not hide it from Jesus. He probably wanted some of this double portion. He also did what most people did in those days, by taking it to the rabbi. Jesus did not want to interfere, but Jesus wanted to help him to understand and see his own greed, and to let him realize what is really important in life. That there's things in life much more important than to steal from others. And when Jesus speaks about the rich person, he actually means someone who acquired his wealth by stealing from someone else. It's also a very negative picture of this rich fool. It seems clear that this rich fool only thought of himself. He did not care about anyone else. Repeatedly he says, I will do this and I will do that, without realizing that everything belongs to God, without realizing that God controls everything, life and death. And his attitude is very similar to the fool of the wisdom context of the Old Testament. There was an Epicurean philosophy which said that man's utmost desire is to have and gain pleasure and happiness. That you would eat and drink and be merry. And this refers to an attitude that existed among the well-to-do Jews in the Isaiah context. But the Old Testament, the whole wisdom literature says, but this person are actually, these persons are fools, because they must remember what they have is what God gave them, and they must share it with each and every person, and they must reckon with God, because God controls life and God is in charge of everything, even death. And I think it is in this context that this man in the parable is indeed a fool for not realizing that God is in control. Yes, that he did not see his own greed, and yes, in the process, he destroyed his future. Amen. The text for the sermon this morning comes from verses 17 to 19. He thought to himself, what shall I do? I have no place to store my crops. And then he said, this is what I will do. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I'll say to myself, you have plenty of good things laid up for many years. Take life easy. Eat, drink, and be merry. Someone made a very witty remark in the week when I said I'm going to preach on the parable of the rich fool. This person said, the rich fool, the poor idiot. And I think these four words sum it all up. The rich fool indeed missed the whole point of living a life in relationship to God. He was very poor in his understanding of life. And his greedy character can be easily seen. Instead of acquiring wealth for the benefit of the poor and to the glory of God, he just wanted to enrich himself by stealing from someone else. He did not think of God, who indeed saw his greed. In this parable, God does not give him much time to correct his way. God says in the parable, tonight, your life will end. And Jesus says, this outcome is actually a tragedy, and it could have been prevented if this rich man, this fool, was indeed rich toward God, meaning if he was thinking of the treasure of heaven, if he was focusing on the real treasure, the eternal riches, that can't be bought by wealth. It can't be earned by good deeds or any human effort. Salvation, entering the kingdom, is by grace alone. And human merit has no standing before God. But God grants reward to those who serve him. This reward of gaining the kingdom of heaven. The parable is clear. The rich man in the parable actually owned nothing. His life and everything he had was a gracious loan by God, something that could be suspended in any point of time. But the gospel offers a solution to the problem of greed. Give to those in need. Do not become a slave of possessions and acquiring more. Do not think they have the quality of the eternal kingdom. Focus on God. Yes, make God your first priority. Because indeed it's a fool who says, there is no God. And I think this is a timely message for us all. We can be so easily lured in to believe that material things and wealth can make us happy and give us eternal happiness. We can so easily forget that God is in charge of all things and that everything comes from his fatherly hand out of love. Nothing belongs to us. Everything is God's. We received a huge mortgage free of charge from God. We do not have to repay him. We do not have to do anything extraordinary to enter the kingdom of heaven. He already did everything for us just because he loves us. He only expects us to live our lives like people who are eternally grateful, who takes nothing for granted, but glorifies him for everything that is being received, and focuses on him and put him first in everything. It's only through faith that we can enter his eternal kingdom. And it's only by faith alone that we can enter into a relationship with God. But what is faith? The Heidelberg Catechism says, true faith is not only the knowledge and the conviction that everything that God reveals in his Bible is true. It is also a deep-rooted assurance created in me by God's Spirit through the gospel, that out of sheer grace, earned by Christ, not only others, but I too have had my sins forgiven have been made forever right with God and have been granted salvation. That's the meaning of living a life thanking God. And that is indeed the message today. We must remember who we are. We are nothing. We are created by God to live in this life to His glory. We are on this earth to show and tell the other people that God granted us salvation, that God gave you and me a new destiny, a destiny to enter into His kingdom, a kingdom that's not being built by men, a kingdom that lasts forever and ever. And we must remember that this earthly things cannot make us happy. These earthly things can in 1 minute disappear. But having this hope to enter the kingdom of heavens, that cannot be taken away. This is the message of this reading this morning. May we never ever forget who we are